All right. Hi, everybody. It's RCFB Talk 75. We've made it 75 in, and we're going to have a guest tonight. My name is Bob Akhayeri. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, JD Moore. And today we're joined by someone I've been actually looking forward to having on, Arash Markazi. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Can you hear me?
We sure can. And JD, have you been able to make it on?
Yes, absolutely. Excited to talk about some of the awesome things that are happening in the sports world with our good guest tonight. Obviously, an expert in the Los Angeles, Vegas, and Hawaii markets, three of the best markets, I think, to be basing yourself in if you got to ingrain yourself in any market. Very excited to talk about all the college football and even all the sports that are happening in all of those markets. It's going to be a fantastic conversation.
So for those of you out there who may not be familiar, I mean, Arash has been around for a while. I mean, I'm familiar with his work back at SI, at ESPN, the LA Times, and most recently he had the morning, he still has the morning column and the Arash Markazi show, which is a podcast. And then they just launched, I was actually listening to the Twitter space for the launch of the Sporting Tribune. Could you tell us some more about that?
Yeah, so it's a website that I've launched in partnership and connection with Chris Mattman, Chief Technology Officer at NASA JPL, which again, a lot of people are like, wow, he's a scientist and does all these amazing things. But at the core of it, he's a sports fan. And so that's how we connected when we were both teaching at USC. We both went to USC around the same time. Both have spent a lot of time in Vegas and Hawaii. And really, we're thinking of a unique way to cover sports. And again, it's a very big market, but it like in a unique way. And when I say that, it's always hard to like try to explain that. But again, the way local sports is covered now, it's really focused on the big teams in town. You drive around town and you turn on sports talk. It's about the Lakers. It's about the Dodgers. And now that they're a top five, top 10 team, it's about USC. A lot of teams in this market, though, get forgotten. So if you're a hockey fan, if you're a soccer fan, if you're a combat sports fan, if you're a fan of some of these teams that don't get the attention, the thought process that we had there was, is there a way we could cover these teams with the care that these fans like actually, like, is there a way to actually cover these teams and give them proper coverage? And so that's the thought process there. And again, we've been up for about 6 days, not a full week even. And so what I didn't appreciate when I first began the project was the number of teams in the market. Because when you say Southern California, you're talking about San Diego. You're talking about all these college teams and pros teams. And so now that hockey's beginning to start up again, we have to kind of, and we've begun the process of talking to people to cover hockey, soccer. But again, I know this is a college football podcast. I think we're all very excited in Southern California, and me specifically because I went to USC, happy and thrilled with where USC is at right now.
Well, you're talking to another Trojan here, so I get that. Actually, JD's from, I mean, he didn't go to Hawaii, but he grew up in Hawaii. So you've got some folks here, and like a proper, person from Southern California, I made my annual pilgrimages to Las Vegas around Christmas time. So, all three of those markets are dear to the two of us quite a bit. And I've noticed you guys have pulled in some interesting talent to cover some of those markets. Like you have Steve Karp over in Vegas. We have Nick Abramo in Hawaii. So you've brought some folks with a history of coverage in those areas to expand to those markets.
Yeah, I mean that was a really big key for me is that if we're going to cover those markets, have people cover them that have the appreciation for the history of that market. And I'll give you a perfect example. I was talking to Steve Karp yesterday, and I said, Steve, I know the idea for your column on Monday is about college football, pro football, what the football scene looks like in Las Vegas. That being said, if Vegas wins their first professional sports championship on Sunday with the Vegas Aces, we have to cover it. And I gotta tell you, he did such an amazing job of really painting the picture of the significance of what that championship meant. I mean, having covered UNLV back in the day, having covered sports there for 30 years, that's what you get with a guy like Steve Karp. And with Nick, if anything happens in Hawaii, whether it's recruiting, whether it's prep sports, the World Series, you know, things like that. So having those guys there, and I don't want to pat myself on the back, but I think if something happened in Southern California with the Dodgers or the Lakers or the Rams, I have the history of growing up here where, like, I think I can talk about that. And so what I wanted to do is get a guy in Vegas and a guy in Hawaii who could do the same thing.
Arash, I'm very curious with this venture that you've got with the Sporting Tribune. We've kind of mentioned the sports that are undercovered, especially in the Los Angeles market. If you're trying to follow the Kings or the Ducks or any of these other teams that isn't necessarily the Lakers or the Dodgers or these big marquee teams, I'm very curious, what is the fan that you chase after? What's that fan profile that you're trying to write to and say, wow, this is the publication that I've been looking for?
The idea here is, I think that fans want to, on social and just in terms of the coverage, want someone that they can relate to, want someone that they can talk to, want someone who cares about the team the same way they care about the team. I think one of the things that I've heard as a criticism for the business model, you know, in the way that I describe it to people, is I would love to have a beat reporter that has a history with that team. And when I say that, you know, a lot of newspapers, for example, will go out and hire a young journalist who just graduated from a college in New Jersey and have them cover the USC Trojans. And I think that they would do a fantastic job with that. When I say that I would rather have a journalist who grew up with USC and remembers the Pete Carroll time period, is that the fan base will connect with that reporter, because the reporter will come with it with the mindset and the institutional knowledge of knowing this is what that fan base, like, what the expectation is. So I think a lot of times we think that, listen, if you hire someone like that, they're going to be a cheerleader. I think it's the opposite. In fact, I think I'm going to have to rein back some of the reporters in terms of saying, hey, I know your expectation is a championship. That's not that realistic. So, you know, when I hire, you know, Blake Harris loves the Dodgers. He makes no mistake about it. You follow Blake Harris on the Dodgers, he celebrates every Dodgers win. But I think he's very hard on the team when they lose. And so, like that, that's someone fans can connect with. They can relate to someone like that. And so I know that that's not a traditional way to view how to cover teams. But I think there's a variety of ways you can cover teams. At the end of the day, this is sports, and it's supposed to be fun. And so if USC is winning, quite frankly, I'm not going to hide the fact that I went to USC, that I taught at USC, that I think it's good for college football, it's good for Los Angeles if USC is doing well. So if you want me to pretend like I don't care, I'm not going to do that anymore.
You know, this kind of flows into another question. We're talking about the fans that you're aiming for. You know, one thing you always hear, especially since we deal with a national audience, is the characteristic of the LA sports fan. And we know the stereotype, very, you know, it loves a winner. Sort of in the analog on the East Coast might even be the Miami fan, Miami area fan, more than someone perhaps in New York City. How would you characterize the LA sports fan?
They are, listen, you do have to win. And I think we've talked about that a lot. I think like whenever a new team comes to town, whether it was the Rams or the Chargers, the expectation is you have to win. I like that. I know that there's a lot of fans around the country who say that's fair weather, that's fickle. You can say that. But at the end of the day, if you're a pro, I'll just – you. By the way, it's not just pro, because I was about to say, like, I'll just focus on pro. It's pro plus college sports. Now, if you are a team in Los Angeles, you have to bring a winner and you have to bring a certain level of excitement to the field, to the court. Because if you don't, no one's going to show up. And I know, you know, you can insert your joke about Chip Kelly, but listen, I respect that UCLA at the end of the day swung for the fences and they hired a coach like Chip Kelly. We'll see how that pans out. I think generally speaking with UCLA, I think 100,000 seat stadium for a program like that's not realistic. And I know they're doing their best to make it as good as it could possibly be there. That will be tough. But when you look at the teams in Los Angeles, like each one has a star player. The majority of them have at least one transcendent player, someone that when you look at one of the best players of all time or top 10 players in the country, LeBron James and Anthony Davis with the Lakers, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George with the Clippers, Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman with the Dodgers, Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani. You go down the list. That's because they know if you're going to draw fans in Los Angeles, you can't just roll out a product and say, hey, we're the only pro sports team in town, or hey, we're the only college team in town. You really do have to put out a good product.
Arash, speaking of that good product, I'm very curious. We've mentioned how Los Angeles seems to love a winner, but with USC and UCLA headed to the Big Ten, does it matter that they're not playing any kind of regional rivals that you would normally pick up with a Cal, a Stanford? Do you think fans will get fired up about a winner if they're winning games against Northwestern, against Iowa, against Rutgers, you name it there in the Big Ten?
I really don't think that matters to Los Angeles, because I think if you were to go to all of those schools that you just named and you go to all those schools in the Big Ten, their largest alumni outside of that school is probably in California. And so I think with Los Angeles in particular, you go down the list, whether it's Michigan, Michigan State, Northwestern, Nebraska, I mean, Los Angeles and Southern California in particular, like if it's not number one, it's certainly like in the top five. And what you've seen with the pro teams in town, and I know that the home teams don't like to hear this, if you're going to make one road trip, if you're going to say, hey, listen, we're going to make one road trip this season, you're going to come to Los Angeles. And so I never worry about that being a problem. I do worry about what the travel is going to be like for those two schools, and not just for football, because again, they travel first class, they take the planes. You know what that's like for, you know, softball, gymnastics, soccer, things like that.
You know, we know the benefit of USC heading over to the Big Ten. It was a surprise, but it wasn't a shocker. I think what took most general fans by surprise was UCLA going along, mostly because I think, especially as we've been coached with why conferences expand the way they do now, as they're trying to spread their market value to a variety of markets. Even when the Pac-10 went to the Pac-12, they were talking about the value of Salt Lake City, the value of Denver, you know, when they were looking at those teams joining, for, and in addition to the other reasons. But with UCLA, they doubled down on Los Angeles. And before I get to the next question, what do you think led to that decision specifically to take those two teams?
They needed two. I mean, at the very least, and I think that they probably need more, at least for travel purposes. If you remember when the Dodgers moved from Brooklyn to Los Angeles, the Giants of New York moved out with them. You really need two. You really need to connect those teams. That rivalry had to stay intact. So whether it was stayed in the Pac-12 or now moved to the Big Ten, they were a tandem. They were a package deal. Good for UCLA, because I don't know if that would have happened on its own. But for travel purposes and for a lot of reasons, UCLA was a part of that deal. I was very fascinated how that played out, because obviously it was a public school plus a private school. A private school can kind of do what they want. A public school, not so much. But you needed to really connect those schools. Those two schools had to be in connection some way, somehow. They are rivals, but when it comes to sports, across the board, football, hoops, you go down the list, they needed to be connected.
You know, there's definitely a benefit to UCLA, because they were, you know, the travails of their athletic department and the budget and trying to make ends meet will certainly be buttressed by having the Big Ten money come in, especially if the numbers are as high as everyone expects them to be. But I think, did they bring enough benefit to the Big Ten? You know, because it's like the opposite side of it. The Big Ten certainly benefits UCLA, but how much of a benefit will UCLA bring to the Big Ten? Is it the name? Is it, you know, basketball is important. We know that. But what, football is the biggest breadwinner of them all. But is UCLA, is because if you've been, I mean, I've been around the world. You go to an H&M in some random European country and see a UCLA shirt. So is that what they were looking for? I'm just trying to see what, you know.
Listen, Big Ten was, I mean, if you just talk about hoops, for example, John Wooden and the history that they have, there's value in that, in Pauley Pavilion and hoops. Okay, so there's that. The football team, and I want to call it a sleeping giant because we've called it a sleeping giant forever, but it is in Los Angeles. And for goodness sake, I mean, like, the kids who don't go to USC should go to UCLA. That should be, and it has been, by the way, guys. I mean, like, this is, like, I just think that the crowds are painting such a bad picture. They haven't lost a game. These games haven't been good. The opponents haven't been good. They are 3-0, but they do have the potential of being a decent to slash good football team. And then so you move past football, and if you could listen, they're not going to move into a 25,000 seat soccer style stadium. I know Troy Aikman tweeted that out. That's not happening. But then you go across the board in terms of, you know, gymnastics and softball and baseball. And I mean, they are one of the best collegiate programs, like, of all time. So there is value there. At the end of the day, though, Big Ten now owns Los Angeles. They don't have to split Los Angeles. It's not like the Pac-10 or the Pac-12. Sorry, I still call it the Pac-10. The Pac-12 got half of Los Angeles, and they do get one game against USC. The Big Ten owns Los Angeles in 2024. And so there is value there. It'll be greater value when the football team is actually a decent team. And I'm not saying, by the way, they could be a decent team this year. It's just these storylines have really captivated the country in terms of seeing a 100,000-seat stadium filled with maybe, I don't know, 10, 15,000. It looks terrible.
Given that, you know, we're not going to necessarily see an on-campus stadium happening with UCLA, what are the odds that there's ever an option game to somewhere outside of the Rose Bowl? Like, I'm thinking, like, you know, in the DFW Metroplex, once upon a time, TCU would option games like Ohio State to be played in Cowboy Stadium. I mean, is this an option where if there's a big enough Big Ten school, like a Michigan coming to town against UCLA, that they option it to, like, maybe SoFi Stadium or some other stadium for at least, like, a one-off?
They could certainly do that. I think what people have to look into, and I always go back to this because it's always like a knee-jerk thing. Whenever you see a poor crowd, just move them. There is always a reason why a team moves. There's always a reason why a team looks for a new place to play. You got to look at the lease. UCLA is locked into, when I say a long term, I forget whether it's 100-year, 50-year. I mean, it is an extremely long-term lease to play at the Rose Bowl, and it was tied in to the reconstruction, and they got brand new club seats at the Rose Bowl, suites at the Rose Bowl. They didn't do that for the one game they have per year. They did that because at the very least, they've locked into 10 UCLA games, you know, 4 concerts, the Rose Bowl, and so they need those events. So if you're going to move one game, and so, but by the way, if you were to move one game to SoFi, I'm guessing it's not like a really bad game. I'm guessing it's a game that's going to sell out SoFi. The Rose Bowl wants that game. So that's why that in particular makes it extremely hard. USC runs the Coliseum. UCLA doesn't so much run the Coliseum, but they effectively do. I mean, they've really signed a long-term lease there, and that is their home. The problem for them is, and USC was really smart in doing this, when they redid the Coliseum, they reduced the capacity. Because in 2022 and moving forward with high-def TV, surround sound, things like that, like, it's really hard for a fan to say, like, I'm going to leave my comfort of home to go to a game. So now capacity at the Coliseum is 75K. and that's going to be hard for them to fill. They were talking about, will it sell out for Fresno State? No, it didn't. They will sell out the Coliseum at some point this year. It's hard to do. With the Rose Bowl, it's still almost 100,000 because of that one game per year. And so, like, I would love for them to play a home game per year, like at SoFi. That will be hard to do.
You know, while we're on the topic of home stadiums, I do want to also make sure that, you know, we talk about some of the other markets that you do cover, Hawaii being one of them. And I know that the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors right now are in a bit of a predicament with their stadium. What's the latest that we need to know about the Aloha Stadium situation and what's happening with Hawaii and their home stadium right now?
So Aloha Stadium, I mean, that's so unique because, I mean, they did get it approved where they will be beginning construction at some point in the not too distant future in terms of a brand new stadium. Thankfully for them, it's going to be a reduced capacity stadium. Where they're playing right now is kind of one of those, you know, what they're talking about for UCLA, where it's very reduced capacity. But the new Aloha Stadium has a proposed capacity of 35,000. 35,000 is perfect for Hawaii football, right? And I mean, so again, that was another situation with Aloha Stadium where that capacity was 75K for the Pro Bowl. And again, it was one game per year that they were happy to get. Now moving forward, it'll be reduced capacity. So that should be done by, again, they're saying 2023. I'm thinking more along the lines of 2024. But the beauty of Hawaii football for me, certainly if you're like in New York, when I lived in New York, it was my favorite team because, I mean, I don't sleep. I go to bed late. So to have that game kick off at midnight and the sun was still out in Honolulu, I love those games.
You know, this begs a transition to San Diego State because they just opened Snapdragon Stadium, which is 35,000. Is that sort of, I mean, obviously that first game was super hot and it was unusual for them because they played in the afternoon as well. I think it was the hottest game ever at San Diego State. But casting aside those hiccups, does that seem like an ideal venue for, you know, the major college football team? And we know you exist, San Diego Toreros, but the major college football team in a major city.
100%. I think 35. So what that does, it enables you to do two things. It enables you to sell out the stadium on a consistent basis. That's a really big key. So not just, don't think about the one bowl game a year. Don't think about the one non-conference opponent you might get. This is a building that will be a centerpiece of your city for 365 days a year. So what are the like other events that you could potentially have? What are the other teams you could possibly get to play there? If you're in that 30,000 seat range, you're in the range for a Major League Soccer team, some other teams, a professional lacrosse team maybe, or something along those lines where, again, like even if you were to tarp half of it, you can still have other events there. When you're the Rose Bowl, and I'm just going to use them for like an example, you can really only count on one finger or two fingers the number of events or of, you know, games or concerts that would pack 100,000 seats stadium. It's the Super Bowl. It's like Jay-Z and Beyonce. I mean, like, there's not that many events you're going to pack 100,000 seats. So what you have, like, and again, if you reduce it even more, if you say 25,000 seats, it's a good college football team that's going to pack the house and it's going to be rocking. It could be a soccer team. It could be a lacrosse team. It could be a concert. It could be a show. It could be a graduation venue. So now all of a sudden that stadium can be used more than twice a year.
Oh, no kidding. And I mean, I think immediately to something like Allegiant Stadium, which just opened up and now is the home for UNLV. Like, not only do you have an NFL team there, but you have a college team there, and you have the second most expensive stadium that's ever been built right in the middle of Paradise City with Las Vegas. I mean, that has to have a huge impact for what you're going to be able to do for building some kind of buzz around that kind of program, right?
100%. I mean, the problem there, too, is that it's just more than that. But they've done, I mean, really, they just have to win now. They have to recruit well. But they've really done everything that they can. They have the stadium in place. They have the practice facility in place. Now they just have to win. They have to produce on the field. what Allegiant Stadium enabled Las Vegas to do is have a stadium right on the Strip. I mean, I was so amazed. Like, you know, people would say, I'm going to Vegas to see UNLV. Well, the Sam Boyd Stadium was nowhere near the Strip. You had to hop on a,
awful.
Like a car. It was like a half hour away if you were lucky without traffic. And so now they have a first-class facility. Now, what's the problem there is ideally, of course, for UNLV, the size of that program and whatnot, is you would like to have a 25-seat venue. They're not going to pack the house. That's going to be hard for them to do. But they're on the Strip. They're playing in the same football stadium as a National Football League team. It's great for the program. If they get a Major League Soccer team, and UNLV probably won't do this, but they probably should, they should move into that facility.
You know, David, you've been patient. You wanted to ask a question. I noticed you cover Big Ten sports. What was your question for Arash? Oh, you got hit on mute.
Hey, guys, what's up?
David, what's up? What's your question?
Yeah, so I'm just getting done watching the Eagles put a beating on the Vikings tonight. Darius Slay set the tone on the defense. Jalen Hurts, unreal.
Absolutely. So what's your question?
Oh, yeah. So the thing about like what you were saying about should MLS bring a team to Las Vegas, I totally agree. They should, especially one of the questions that I was saying, would they ever bring an MLS? Actually, I'll take that back. There's a big debate going on right now saying, should the WNBA bring a team to Philadelphia? Which, here's another thing. I am shocked that they have not already brought a team to Philly by now. It's flat out embarrassing that they have not done it.
I agree. I think Philadelphia is one of, if not, top five sports out in America. They would totally embrace the team. I would love it. And I think what people forget is that, you know, what a team like that does when they win. You know, forget when they're losing. Like, they're going to have a parade on the Las Vegas Strip for the WNBA team there. Because when a team wins and they're from your city and they win that championship, you hop on that bandwagon. I know Los Angeles gets a lot of grief, but a lot of cities do the same thing. You know, like, you may not be a WNBA fan, but if your team wins the city and you got a parade, you're going to it.
Absolutely. You know, Arash, I wanted to just check in with you time-wise. I know you know, it's been about 30 minutes. If you have more time, we'd love to talk with you, but I know it's late. Oh, great. Well, because, I just wanted, David, do you want to add anything more to that? Me and JD were laughing. We're like, oh, this is totally the direction we thought this conversation was going to go. because that's, by the way, that's exciting. I mean, that is the first pro team to win a national championship for Vegas. I don't want to take anything away from that. The Aces, I think I saw on your Twitter feed, they've got, you know, all the Strip casinos.
Yeah.
Big signs up for them. That's incredible.
It's just so great because Vegas, and we're a few days away from the 5-year mark of the shooting in Las Vegas, which really, you know, really brought that community together. I think there's so many people, when they think of Vegas, they think of the hotels on the Strip. They forget about Henderson. They forget about Summerlin. They forget that there is an actual community there of people who live there and grow up there and have kids there. And so the coolest thing about the Tribune so far is watching that game yesterday and calling up Steve Karp. And if you don't know Steve Karp, 6-time Nevada Sports Writer of the Year. He's in 3 Hall of Fames. As soon as we started this company, he was in retirement. And he said, I'm coming out of retirement because I believe in you and I want to be a part of this thing. And I called him up and I said, I hate to just call to give you an assignment. I've never done that before. But I need your thoughts on this. You covered UNLV. You covered the Vegas Golden Knights. You've been there for 30 years. What is the significance of this? And without fail, he said, I'm on it. I'm gonna hop off the phone right now and punch out a column. And he did it. And it was fantastic. And that's the beauty of sports, because Karp was there the night of the shooting. And he can kind of talk about what the significance of that night is to Vegas and sports in that community. And the hockey team would have been fine, but that city having a professional sports team during that time period helped the healing process. And having been there firsthand, I saw it. I still get emotional talking about it. That run that team that had that year where they go all the way to the cup final, I mean, it was incredible.
You know, and Karp also, he covered UNLV under, yeah. You know, Tarkanian when exactly. They did win a national title.
Yeah, you go to Piero's. Piero's is the most like iconic restaurant in Vegas. It's like the Italian spot. If you've watched the Showtime documentary or shows they have on HBO, the one where Dr. Buss is meeting up Tarkanian to talk about the deal with the Lakers, that's at Piero's. And you watch any Las Vegas film, all the Italian spots, that's Piero's. You walk into Piero's, there are carp columns hanging from the wall there. So that just gives you like an idea of what he means.
Love it. Hey, Austin, you've been patient. You had a question. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, how are y'all doing tonight?
Great.
Obviously, you can see I'm a huge Auburn fan. I was at this game this last weekend, and I was just thinking, do y'all think Harsin's going to get fired like before the bye week or something?
Oh, Harsin. Yeah, I mean... Wow, we've totally gotten into SEC football unexpectedly. Yeah, you know, and I feel bad for our guest because he's focused on Southern California. We'll touch on that just a little bit. We're going to have our big call-in show, typical call-in show tomorrow night. But I will say things look like they're going to be tough in Auburn heading in the rest of the season. Now, we're going to give him the rest of the season to look at. I mean, how he does in SEC play is going to be, I think, quite important for his job security. But as we know how when the offseason, there are folks there that really do want him out. All we're going to get is more drama. And I feel bad for regular Auburn fans in all of this. But unfortunately for you, the rest of us are all going to be entertained watching how this all pans out. And no one wants to be the fan of that situation. But although, now I'm going to transition back, being USC fans. USC fans certainly know what that was all about with the Clay Helton years. Every year was like, oh, are they letting him go this year? And then they wouldn't. And they would keep going. And then they wouldn't. And then, as we know, the humor of it was last year he was the first head coach fired. And this year he was the person who caused the first head coach to be fired when he took Georgia Southern in. And, of course, he lost the game right afterwards. So, you know, Georgia Southern fans, he could be meant for you. He could be a perfect fit. But, you know, that's just how the cookie crumbles. But, yeah, you know, Arash, I want to kind of take us over there, too. Why do you think it took USC so long to make that change?
It was so amazing because I was always I could never believe the number of people who said, he's a good guy. And I said, I'm not saying if he's a good guy or not a good guy. By the way, when I taught at USC, Clay Helton spoke to my classes, and I said, I can separate him being a good man from him being a good coach, or by the way, a good enough coach for USC. And there's a big difference there, right? There's a big difference in saying he's a good man, he is a good man. He's a good coach. Okay, like maybe, maybe not. Is he a good enough coach for USC? No. I mean, I never felt that. We had made the bar so low by the time Clay Helton took over for the second time. And again, people have to remember, speaking of Las Vegas, the first time Clay Helton was the coach of USC was after Lane Kiffin gets fired. Coach O takes over. Coach O didn't get the full-time job. They went to Sark. Coach O's like, I'm not staying for the Vegas Bulls. Clay Helton stayed on to coach that team. And then Helton stays on for Sark. We know what happened there with Sark. So then Helton got back. And then it was really to the point where, like, is this guy going to lie? Is this guy going to drink? Is this guy going to do, like, and it's like, no, but you shouldn't do that. That's an incredibly low bar. Like, he's a good man. He's not going to drink on the job. He's not going to lie about who he voted in the polls or little things like that. Like, no, but, like, that shouldn't even come up. So it was amazing that, like, it's two things. Not only the fact that he kept his job, but that he got the contract extension that he did. I will never, like, understand that. Lynn Swann, to my dying day, I'll never get. I mean, he was a terrible athletic director, but how he gave Clay Helton a kind of contract they made it almost impossible for you to let go of a guy like that. And by the way, by the time that they finally had to let Helton go, there was no one in the stands. I was at that Stanford game where they're getting blown out. And it's like they cannot continue like this. They can't continue to have Clay Helton come back. And so it is amazing to me how quickly things have turned. And thank God for the transfer portal if you're USC. And I've talked about this before with people. When you turn on football games on Sunday and Monday, and I think it's around the country, but certainly here in Los Angeles, there's this Caleb Williams commercial that I'm like, if you're a college football player watching this Caleb Williams commercial on a Sunday or a Monday while you're watching pro football, USC, this pipeline that they're going to build because they're Los Angeles, because they're Hollywood, because they got all this going on, this is just the beginning of the turnaround, I think, for USC.
Do you think, you know, and you brought up a great point, because Lynn Swann, you know, cares about the school, but I think that was hopefully, and I think a lot of athletic departments had this tradition of wanting to bring, because that was historically what it was across America, you know, the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, you bring in a former athlete, a superstar, yeah, a Mike Garrett, you know. And I'll give Hayden some credit. He was brought in to fix some things, and you know, he had that background as someone who could possibly do it, and I think he was just happy to get out as soon as he could. And then Lynn Swann, who was making I still couldn't believe he scheduled for the UC Davis game. That to me was like, do you even know what your exactly. fan base cares about? But then, you know, was bringing in Mike Bone, was that an important moment? Because he brought in somebody instead of being an alumnus, someone who had – you know, from Cincy, who had a track record, who seemed to know how to run a program rather than someone who knew how to glad hand wealthy alumni and, you know, talk about, you know, probably talk to those folks about, oh, do you remember that big catch you had or things like that? Was that the moment that changed? We're assuming a lot, but if USC goes on to kind of return to prominence, is that the moment that is the most important transition point?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many big moments, but I think with Mike Bone coming in, it was the beginning of the, okay, we are going to not stick with this USC guy, USC man. And by the way, that had never been a thing that I was aware of. I know of Mike Garrett, of course, but yeah, like we had kind of fallen into that. What connection does he have to USC? Like, is he a Trojan man? Like, does he, you know, like, is it Pat Hayden or Lynn Swann? And it's like, you can have alumni who's an associate athletic director, who's not calling the shots, who's shaking hands, who's getting paid, who's not a part of the like executive team. That was a big moment, but there were so many really big moments there. And I think with the changing of the guard or the changing of college football, changing of college sports, really, this transfer portal and how the landscape of college sports is changing, that changed the game for USC. And how did it change the game for USC? Well, look at all the wealthy donors. And again, so these are things that they were doing below the table that we kind of wink, wink. Like, USC was doing that, but obviously they weren't doing a very good job of that, right? Now that it's above board, now that you could say, okay, you can legally have guys do commercials. You can legally give them car deals. You can legally give them tickets to games. There is no better place in the country for that than Los Angeles. If you want to talk about a recruiting trip, courtside tickets to the Lakers or the Clippers, behind home plate at the Dodgers, you know, I mean, like, there's so many things that you could do in Los Angeles now. That was the big change. So, yes, Mike Bone was big, but the transfer portal, because I think of what happened with USC football, Lincoln Riley was big, yes. But if Caleb Williams goes on to have the season that it looks like he will have, and if he accepts the Heisman Trophy, like in New York, it's really that combo. It's not just Lincoln Riley. It's the Lincoln Riley-Caleb Williams combo that will change the course of USC.
You know, that makes me want to ask a question. What was the bigger surprise? Lincoln Riley being hired out of, you know, seemingly nowhere, or the even more abrupt announcement that USC is joining the Big Ten.
I think it was, well, to be, I mean, to be honest, both were crazy. Both were really crazy because you have to remember the Lincoln Riley thing came the day after they lose to BYU. And I was at that game in the Coliseum, and there was more blue in that crowd than Cardinal and Gold. So it was an embarrassing performance. And at that point, you're just thinking, like, who is going to want to come to this? Who is going to want to turn this crap around? I mean, this is in like a joke. And Lincoln Riley at the time wasn't thought about coming to USC, obviously. So when, I think if it was in Bruce Feldman, it was someone tweeted it out first that this was being talked about. And when a reporter like that, and I love Bruce, when he tweets that out, you know that, okay, things are happening. Like, he's not just putting that out there. That, I mean, that was shocking. They were both shocking. But the Lincoln Riley one, I mean, what the significance of that meant was massive. I'll never forget. I said, I was here as a student when Pete Carroll took over this team following Paul Hackett. They go 6-6 that first year, no transfer portal. The very following year, Carson Palmer wins the Heisman. They're the number 2, 3, 4 team in the country.
Oh, I remember that. My time at USC corresponded perfectly with the firing of John Robinson and the entirety of the Paul Hackett years. So, you know, I joke if I – maybe one day we'll have Petros on here and we'll just commiserate. But he led yes. the team that I had to watch on the field in those seasons. But
One thing I want to throw in on top of that, the other night watching that – what was it, Iowa-Nevada game past like 1:30 in the morning, got me thinking, okay, this is what everybody here in Big Ten country is waiting when USC and UCLA comes over. So I'm like, okay, well, I can get used to this. I can get used to Penn State going out on the West Coast and playing SC or UCLA at 1 o'clock in the morning. That's fine.
You know, David, I just have to say, you know, I don't think, and maybe I might be off on this, Arash, you can tell me, but I don't think there's ever been a lightning delay in L.A., but there was that game in Seattle for Washington that had a lightning delay. And I think it kicked off at some just unreal time, like 2 or 3 in the morning Central Time, which is where I'm at. I remember it was so desperate. We at RCFB on this Twitter account, we actually had one of their backup quarterbacks send us a DM to ask us, "Do you know when we're starting?" Because they had no idea in the locker room. But so
I West Coast game, forgot that one.
But another thing I'm really looking forward to is when USC and UCLA come east to come to play like Michigan, Ohio State, or even Penn State in mid-November when they're freezing their asses off.
Exactly.
Are you going to be going with the game? I mean, if you come up here to Minnesota, you got to tell me, man. You know, we'll hang out. We'll make it.
Oh, for sure. Things. By the way, that's what I'm most excited about. All these new road trips. I mean, no knock on the Pac-12, of course. I mean, some of the best towns in the country, but really excited to like work in a lot of these other, you know, towns too, whether it's in Minneapolis or Iowa or Nebraska or wherever.
You know, Arash, I know we've kept you a long time, so I want to go ahead and wrap this up, but could you tell our audience where to find you, where to find your work, as well as this great new website you've launched?
Yeah, so thesportingtribune.com, thesportingtribune.com, covering Southern California, Las Vegas, and Hawaii. Just got that going a week ago, and so very excited about that. Hope you guys check that out. Got my show on. By the way, the reason that we kind of focus on there, my talk show is on the Mightier 1090 in Southern California, the Fan in Las Vegas, and in Hawaii. So that goes hand in hand there. But thrilled to be on with you guys. Did not know a Persian man was behind this incredible Twitter account. Very proud of you. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, thank you. And thanks to all of you who joined us tonight. It was great talking with Arash. It was great talking with all of you. And we even hit a couple of unexpected topics. I mean, maybe Philly will get an MLS team. That would be kind of neat. And WNBA. And will Brian Harrison stay on? That's going to be an ongoing topic. On behalf of all of us, on behalf of myself, Bob Akhayeri, on behalf of J.D. Moore, thank you all out there for joining us tonight. We hope you all have a great evening. Now, I'm going to hang up. and listen.